welcome to another episode of GT Radio Conversations with Tino. And today I have a very special guest and a very close friend who I've known for 15 years, Michael Kahanui. Did I say that right, Mike? Because, you know, I never do.
It's always a good attempt, Tino. I do appreciate it. It's Kahanui.
Kahanui. All right.
Got to hit all those vowels in Hawaiian.
All right, you know, for 15 years I've been saying your name, and I don't think I've gotten it right once, but we'll keep working on it. It's a lifelong endeavor.
It's a work in progress.
Anyways, you know, you and I have worked together, you know, back in the day at the Flamingo and on the Strip and probably at every native casino that you've worked at. But you also have an interesting childhood because you were born in Hawaii. Give us a little rundown of, you know, growing up.
Oh, not a problem. I actually born here in the state of Washington. I'm a Navy brat, so you know, we moved around a lot, and you know, was fortunate to be stationed in Hawaii for several tours, where we really got a chance to grow up, which was unusual for a military family to kind of stay in one place for such a long period of time. But we also got to travel the world and, you know, kind of meet new people in different cultures. And one of them, as you know, is I got to live in Gaeta, Italy, and one of my favorite places
right near where my mother's from.
Right. And just a gorgeous area of the world. And just, I loved it over there. It's one of my favorite places. I'm looking forward to going back.
We're going to have to do that trip together because that whole area also, you know, I went to school around there as a kid. So yeah, that's something we really have in common. Yeah. So Fondi, I think the town where my mother is from, well, I know how far, it's about 10 miles away from there, because it's all beach, all of it, and some of the best beaches in the world, and some of the
gorgeous
best fish in the world.
Very true.
So,
all great.
So you started, yeah, it's all good. You started your career in Atlantic City, right?
I started in Atlantic City back in the mid-90s.
Tell us a little bit about Atlantic City back then. What was the feel? What were you doing, and what was the market like?
You know, Atlantic City back then, we had just deregulated. So the process of even getting your licensing, because back then, to get a license in Atlantic City was just a real, you know, huge packet, even at any level, even at an entry level, it was a huge packet to get in and, you know, cost money to get your license. So back then, once they finally deregulated, they made the operation component a little bit easier. And that's when you saw kind of the sprout up of Taj Mahal. Some of the themed casinos started to pop up. Wild West came after that. But the market back then was, you know, this was Atlantic City. This was literally America's playground. People were coming in from all over the East Coast and flying in internationally. And it was a real great place to be. In fact, it's even though the market's changed a lot, still my favorite casino destination to work at, because you know, nowhere else you can literally walk off the beach and hit that many casinos. It's a real great town.
Yeah, you had the boardwalk there, and so back then it was really more like a destination rather than, it kind of morphed into day trippers after that, but back then it was a destination, right?
Well, yeah, it was definitely a combination of both, and you really had that level of service, you know, across the business, where you had, you know, the high value, you know, destination trip guys, and then you had the day trippers coming out of New York City, Philadelphia, even from, you know, Pittsburgh and Ohio and different places like that. They'd come in just for the day, but it was fantastic to also see the international business coming from South America, coming in from Europe, kind of all over.
Where were you working at the time, and what was your first job? Because that was your
first job ever
doing
in the casino business. Those are always my favorite stories. How did you start? I started as a reservationist at the best location on the Monopoly board, and that was Bally's Park Place, which is at Park Place and Boardwalk. And for all those who don't know, you know, Monopoly is based off of the Atlantic City streets, and so Park Place and Boardwalk at Bally's Park Place, fantastic location, right in the center. And I started as a reservationist. I just needed a job while I was in college at Stockton University. I had a good friend of the family that said, hey, stop working the three jobs you're doing and why don't you come work for me? And that's how I got into the business. And once I started, I was never looking back after that.
What exactly were you doing, and how long were you there, and did you grow into other positions in Atlantic City?
Oh yeah, I started as a reservationist. I think I was there for 3 to 4 months, and then I kind of realized that other positions, I was getting my feet wet. I didn't know no clue about what the casino business was about back then. And as you sat there and you kind of watched these other departments, you always had to say, hey, what's that person doing? Well, how come they get money? Oh, they get tip. Well, I want to work over there. And so, I had progressed through different positions through the hotel, front desk and trainers and those kind of things. And at one point I saw, these guys walking around in suits all day, and they were just talking to people, and they always had a smile on their face. And I said, geez, how do I become one of those guys? What's that guy do? And oh, that's a casino host. And back then you needed to come up through the ranks, and be a supervisor or a pit boss and, work your way up so you could be a casino host. And here I am, this young kid out of college, and was just fortunate for the right timing, because Bally's Park Place was opening up the Wild West themed casino, and they needed a new team of host for both tables and slots. And so they internally opened those positions, and I begged, pleaded, and did anything I could for the poor director, a guy named Jim Scannapico, who I pleaded with that and several of his supervisors to see if I could get an opportunity for that position. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the hosts that were chosen. And I think for maybe 3 weeks, I was at one point the youngest host in Atlantic City at 21, in X amount of months. And it was just a fantastic experience to be a casino host at that age and at that time in my life. And the business was fantastic. And so did that for a couple, for a little while. And
tell us a little bit about what you learned through that experience and what it takes to be a casino host.
Casino host always looks grand. Everything looks great. Grass is greener always on the other side, right? So you look at it and you go, oh, they don't have to do as much. Or it looks great. They walk, talk, eat, drink, do a little bit of math. But the reality was, you're dealing with, high pressured, high valued, sometimes very difficult guests all the time. And the pressure on your time to be there to make sure that their stay is impeccable and that it goes through without an issue, is huge. And so I still recall, I was on my own vacation, just a weekend getaway, in Rhode Island, and got a call, because one of my high value guests was back in Atlantic City and he was having an issue. And so they said, hey, we need you to come on down and help him out. And I did exactly that. I drove down and talked to them and worked through the process and kind of kept going. They gave me my vacation back, obviously, after that. But those were the, it was you were dedicated, And so from Atlantic City, I always remember kind of the values that were driven into me. And right from the beginning, they held you accountable for everything that you did, right? Yeah, and they wanted you to, hey, it's okay to fail, but admit your faults. You take ownership of what you've done, address those issues, and then move forward. Don't dwell on it, and continue to grow and continue to succeed. And if you work hard, success will come your way. And there were just so many examples of that in Atlantic City at the time. There were guys that were VPs or different levels at the property that all started as, frontline team members at one point. Some came from security guards, food and beverage, myself, coming from the hotel side. Everybody was able to work their way up. And if you worked hard and you learned, and constantly learning, it was one of those things that, kind of opened up my eyes to the industry and said, wow, you really can do whatever you want if you work hard for it.
Talk about a lesson in customer service. Because being a casino host is all about that, right?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, it's really getting to know, you got to know your guests, and know everything about them. And back then it was, it's not just them, it's their family and, how are their kids doing and when's their wedding and, what's going on and how are you staying connected? I think oftentimes it gets lost when we talk about all the data we do these days about just those personal connections and the little stories, Guests remember you as an individual. And you're part of that connection to the property. And so, you got to remember them and show how valuable they are to them.
Yeah, it's a people business first. That's we always got to remember. And you're right. A lot of the data has kind of obscured that. People are always talking data, data, data. At the end of the day, it's really about that experience that the customer has when they come to the casino and, how they feel when they leave. And that was your job as a host, correct?
Correct, correct. You wanted to make it from beginning to end the best experience
Right.
possible. And you try to learn all the little things that they enjoyed. So if you could, you know, set their room up with the, you know, the right amount of towels that they wanted, or extra pillows, or the type of pillows they wanted, or even the right fruit plate, or whatever it is that set them up, that said, hey, you know, they're watching me. I didn't ask them for what they wanted. I paid attention to what they needed or what they asked for during the normal course of their stay, and put those things available to them without question, so that it was just available. They knew we were paying attention to them.
Sure. So then you, how did the Vegas, because you moved from Atlantic City and you went directly to the Flamingo, right? How did that materialize?
Well, you know, back then, a lot of things going on in the business, but in Atlantic City, it was a great place to learn. You know, you learn structure, you learn processes, you learn, you know, the value of why you do things. And I always keep those lessons with me. But what you didn't have was growth opportunities. I mean, there literally are people in the same positions that were my supervisors that are currently supervisors now in Atlantic City in those same, or similar type of roles. I think that, you know, the titles have changed as businesses have kind of combined. But it was just hard to grow beyond a certain point. And so where do you go with all that casino knowledge or experience? You go to Las Vegas. You know, that's the place where you can go. And so at the time, you know, for those who are, you know, old enough in the business, you know, Park Place Entertainment was just being formed. And we didn't even have transfers out. We had to basically get hired at the new property, quit your old job, and kind of move over. I was fortunate enough to get a hosting opportunity at Flamingo Las Vegas, which always has a good and bad taste in my mouth, because it was a great opportunity to move to Vegas. If you're a casino host in Vegas, you literally get to kind of learn all about the city with all the different relationships and the different properties, which is fantastic as a new person in Vegas. But when I first got out there, I actually got an offer from another property, which got paid a little higher. But I had the fortune to be interviewed by a guy named Pat Kearns, and Pat Kearns still is probably a legend in the business. And you know, he and I had a great interview, and you know, I thought it went well. I got the job offer, but I got a better paying offer from another property. And you know, I put my application in. I chose that other property, and what happened was, I think a week prior to my start date, I get the, hey, we've rescinded the offer, and I had no idea why. And I'm panicking. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. In the short term, I'm already out in Vegas, so I got to pick another property, or another job. So I told the Flamingo I would take the position. And months go by, and I'm at a VIP party at the Flamingo Ballroom, and Pat Kearns comes up to me and says, hey, how's it going? I said, it's great, you know, really love it, thank you for the opportunity. And he says, yeah, I really wanted you to be here. And I said, well, you know, I'm glad that you guys gave me the job. He goes, no, I called over to the other property and told them that I wanted you, so they couldn't have you. And so, you know, for those months I was panicking and freaking out, but, you know, it was nice to have a guy that kind of recognized you as an individual and said he really wanted to, you know, really wanted to work with you and wanted you to work with him. And so gave me goosebumps in the at the time, but boy, I was, my stomach was churning when I got the original rescinded offer. I didn't know what I was going to do, but it all worked out in the end. And you know, Pat and I have joked about that over the years.
Yeah, and that was a special time, and that was when I came on the scene too. You know, I met you and Dolly and Josh Gray and all the great people that worked there. It was a very special group at the Flamingo. And did you have any interaction with Horst Dujour?
Just a little bit, not as much. You know, when at the time, you know, we had Tony Santo at the property, and you know, he ends up being Western Regional head for Park Place. Very, very smart, direct guy that you know, taught us a lot. We got a little humbled in the process, as we, you know, from Atlantic City, I'm new. I'm thinking, you know, I want to show my stuff, and I'm making these statements in the in these executive meetings, and quickly get put in your place in terms of you know, kind of the overall perspective of the business. And I remember a time where I had mistakenly said, oh, you know, the Flamingo gets treated like the redheaded stepchild of the company, and he goes, this redheaded stepchild, you know, makes the most money out of any of these properties on this trip because it's all paid for. You know, I wasn't even thinking at that level at the time. But you know,
yeah, a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people know don't know that during that period it was basically a money machine. The Flamingo was the highest grossing cash cow, just incredible. And what a great team. And Randy was there too. Randy Sears, right?
Yep, Randy Sears and Matt Buckley, and those two guys again for me were phenomenal. And just kind of you had plenty of opportunity. You know, they always gave you an opportunity to talk and a little bit about the business, but you kind of gleaned their perspective on things and how they managed, you know, kind of give you an idea of what was the right way to do it. And so cool, so calm, so relaxed, and it really was an opportunity to kind of idolize my or you know, position my own career after some of the things that they were doing.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because it's a theme that I've been talking to with a lot of people that I have on the show, and I think it's something that, you know, we as the casino folk need to do, and it's very important, and that's mentorship. You know, in that group, you had a lot of great mentors. Tell us a little bit about them, and tell us a little bit about how that shaped your career, because you were at the Flamingo for quite a while, right?
You know, I was initially there for a short period of time, but then when I moved over to corporate and I worked with the property, and I moved back to the property again as an executive manager for casino marketing and player development. And so always working with these guys at different levels. And you know, when you're new, it's nice that they took the opportunity to let you fail, but in an environment where it wasn't like you were going to lose everything. You know, failure is probably one of life's great lessons, and how you deal with that adversity was one of the lessons that was taught to me at that time in my career. You know, because, you know, we would make a mistake, and, you know, you'd have to come to the carpet and talk about it, and they would walk you through the process, and you know, you would get what is considered the reasonable amount of discipline or whatever for that particular issue. But the reality was is they helped you grow beyond it. You know, they took the time and coached you through what could you be doing, what's the next thing you could do. And I think that's something that I carry with me all the time. Is another person actually at Bally's, her name was Pam Reichert. She was another director in the company, and she always told me, you know, you got to think beyond the first consequence, even the second consequence. If you start doing that, you're going to really see your career rise and succeed. And really, at every level I've grown, you realize how much more magnitude of your responsibilities are and things you have to think about and how they affect other departments and how they affect, you know, this plan or that plan. And you know, you don't always get those opportunities in every company you work for. So when someone takes the time to recognize you as an individual and say that you have potential, and they tell you that, but they say, you know, you're still raw and you need to work for it. I think it's just a great environment to really kind of own your skills a little bit. And I was fortunate enough to have that. So I don't think it was any one, you know, magic wand. Hey, do this all the time and you're going to be successful. I think what it really was an honest approach to business, understanding what the real goals were, and focusing on, you know, the processes. How do we improve what we're doing so that we execute across the board seamlessly? How do we make it so that the guest has the best experience? That they do the least, but they've received the most for their time with you. And how do you make it memorable? Right. That's really what it came down to. How do you make it? All this comes down to guest experience, and how do you make it memorable? And so, you know, I've kept those kind of values with me throughout. And you know, the business level, when you're working with corporate, you know, gaming is, you know, kind of on a different level than when you're working on tribal gaming. And so it was a great structure to have for me to kind of understand just how the whole business works. And then when I was with corporate, I was able to work, you know, from everywhere from Mississippi, everywhere west. And so not only were you working in different regions, you were working at different properties within different regions that all had different needs and different perspectives. And so you learned different approaches to handling businesses based off of this variety of markets. And so for me, corporate gaming just gave me a vast background in kind of filling my tool chest with, you know, things you can do to help, you know, sustain and stimulate the businesses that you're in.
Yeah, and that's a good metaphor, filling your tool chest, because you never know when you're going to need those tools. And, you know, those people that you mentioned, you know, Tony Santos and Pat Kearns and Randy Sears and even Horst and his, you know, Horst du Jour, a legend in the business.
Yeah, Horst du Jour.
Have little interaction with him. Yeah, I mean, wow. And those are all people that left a legacy behind and really nurtured talent, which is something that, you know, is so important and you know, even more important in native gaming because of, you know, the roots are not there and they need to be, you know, they need to be grown and cultivated. So go ahead.
No, say that's I agree with that wholeheartedly. It's one of the things that when I first became a director, that you really started to notice that talent, and the great reward now is to see, you know, when you take the time to recognize the talent and grow and develop that talent, to see them grow themselves. And I'm very pleased to see the people that I've worked with over the years continue to succeed in their career and, you know, continually touch base with them to see, you know, see how things are going. And it's probably the joy in my career now is to kind of see that development and to kind of pay it forward, because, you know, I was very fortunate to have, you know, a good mentorship program and or at least people around me, and I try to pass that on now.
Let's talk a little bit about you know, your first job in native gaming and the kind of what your feelings were and what the differences were and how you had to adapt.
You know,
what was your
That's a great question. You know, when I first heard about the opportunity to work in you know, Indian gaming, I at the time was just naive to, you know, what level of business they were doing and kind of what product they provided. And so when I got the opportunity to fly down and see this property, Paula Casino in San Diego County, I was amazed, one, at the just sheer impressiveness of the property, and then at the level of business that they were doing. And it really took me back to say, wow, these singular properties are doing, you know, far better business than these strip level, you know, Las Vegas properties, and they're doing it in a way which was, you know, in a kind of unique operating environment. And one of the things I've learned, you know, just through my own life as being a military brat and those kind of things is, you know, life comes down to two things really, you know, making friends and solving problems. And so whether it was corporate or tribal environments, you basically still had to read the land and understand the environment you're working in and be able to develop relationships within that environment. And then as problems come up, be able to resolve them as the best you can. And I think, you know, staying true to that particular vision for me has been, you know, very good for my career and just helped me grow as an individual, because you're just really staying focused on what you're there for. And I always tell people, they go, oh, what do you do in the casino business? I said, my job is to make money. You know, that's why they hire you. They hire you to help create revenue for their property. And so, when we focus on what we're doing and why we're doing it, who benefits from all that, it's amazing. And to see, you know, tribes give back in so many different ways to their tribal members, you know, in terms of the facilities and programs and even the money that they're able to give to their members. It's amazing as to what, you know, tribal casinos have done for Indian tribes throughout the U.S.
If you were to say, mention a couple of things on how the, you know, the Indian casinos were different than the commercial casinos, what was the primary difference and how did you adapt to that?
It's a good question. I was pondering something similar to that earlier, and it's never been a big difference. I might be counter to many of my colleagues, but I never considered it a big issue. You know, when you worked with corporate, you had to deal with people, and you know, whenever you get three people, there's going to be politics involved, right? And so there's politics of every different type and sort, and you just got to be able to handle those relationships. So for me, because I always looked at it like that, it was just about relationships and about problem solving. I never looked at it as a difference, and I still don't. You know, every environment is unique, and whether it's corporate or tribal, everyone I move to is always a unique environment. None of them are the same. And so I guess what I expect the most is that it's going to be different, that every property is going to have a different focus. And, you know, I'm just open to what are those opportunities that we can affect change on.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the customer still has to have that seamless experience and be happy when they leave and eager to come back. So, you know, it doesn't really change that much. Were there some logistical challenges, or, you know, just because some of these casinos are remote and they're not, you know, in central places, what would you have any issues with that, or was it basically pretty well the same as like having a decision?
I personally haven't in my career. I've been fortunate to work for kind of well-established tribal casinos, and, you know, they all have great business relationships with their vendors and are generally able to get you know, the things that they need in a reasonable period of time. I think some of the other challenges are maybe some of the regulatory issues, especially up here in Washington. It's not issues, it's just a different environment. And so where you're accustomed in a corporate environment to, you know, be able to access pretty much all the products that are out there, provided that they are, you know, certified, you know, from the right places these days. There's always another layer of I don't want to call it bureaucracy, but of regulation at a tribal level. So each casino tribe has its own body of regulatory mm-hmm. agents. And so being able to work in their environment and understanding what their, you know, kind of rules and restrictions are is always a learning experience when you go to a new property. But once you kind of figure out, you know, what the concerns are of each property, you're able to my approach is to kind of understand what's the lay of the land, and then, if necessary, how do we educate those involved to kind of understand the direction we want to move into and why it's a good idea, and then how we can do that in a way that they feel comfortable regulating it. And we've been able to do that, you know, in each of the different areas. But it's an education process, you know. Not every person in a regulatory body has casino operation background or even regulatory background as it relates to casino. And so for some of these properties, it's brand new. And so I think where some operators in the past, you know, you get frustrated, you know, oh, I can't get this in time, or why do we have to do this, why do we have to do that? I think it's more of, hey, how do we educate everybody to understand where we're going, what we're doing, and why in the end this is all beneficial for the tribe and its membership. And so I just find, you know, clear, open communication and education to be kind of the best solution to those things.
Yeah. So Conrad was on the show, the GM of your property, and he, by the way, he's a great guy, got a lot of experience, good person.
Fantastic. And never walk with him on the casino floor at G2E. You'll stop every 2 seconds. Just try not to.
Yeah, everybody knows who he is. Yeah, everybody knows who he is. He's like a celebrity. I know, he's a great man. Lots of experience. When you started at Muckleshoot, I know that you knew there was some challenges, but now you're up and running, you're breaking records. One of the things that came up in several conversations that we've had and that I've had with Conrad was the idea of identity. Is being able to identify who you are, who your customers are, and catering to that customer. And we've done a couple of panels together discussing that. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's important to understand, you know, in any property, especially here, who is your market? You know, who are your guests, and where are they coming from, and what do they really want? You know, oftentimes we sit around a marketing table and come up with these great ideas that we all love, but have nothing to do with your guests, right? It's not necessarily what they like. And so kind of understanding what we wanted the property to be and what it ends up being is, you know, we want to be your entertainment destination of the South Sound here in the Puget Sound area. And we make great strides to do that by, you know, kind of showing the value and the variety of different things that you can do here at the property. And we continue to grow on that. What type of different experiences you have? You know, we have the first VR, wireless VR facility here in I think in the U.S., but certainly in Washington. I know MGM just started it now, but we've had it for some time now. And you know, it's just kind of adding different elements so that people constantly are interested in what's going on at your property. Because here, you know, like many other places, it's a 20-mile radius, and everyone around us, you know, kind of grew up. We've been here for over 22 years now, and people have grown up Muckleshoot. They've grown up with this property here. They're you know, their parents went here, and they grew up hearing about it from their older brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles, and then, you know, we have a generation now that probably were, you know, their parents met here, and you know, had them, and now they've grown up hearing about it, and now they are turning 21 and 22 and being able to enjoy the same entertainment that we offer. So It's amazing to see how much, you know, Muckleshoot resonates in the community and kind of in their just communal shared experience. Did you get to go do this? Did you see this show? Did you try that thing? These are common conversations amongst the people that we work with. The guests that come here. And it was just important for us to kind of really focus in on what are our guests really wanting. And so, you know, panels and surveys and, you know, the variety of tools you use to kind of glean that information, we were kind of already in place. It's just taking that information and how do we focus our energies to really address it. And so that's where, you know, your data comes in and those elements to help focus your direction. But I always believe in the operator's, you know, instincts. And I really believe data validates an operator's instincts or it helps give you a new opportunity where you didn't think about going. So we were able to do that here, and it's really turned out to be, a very successful last 2 years. But I think you also see that general economy. You know, I'll tell the CFO, I don't take credit for it all, only some of it. Because, you know, the general economy right now is also doing well, and that speaks to some of the revenue increases that we see.
Right, and like you said, it's an interesting fact that we have this cross-generational audience where the parents went to the casino and now their kids are coming, and it's kind of like this shared lineage of this experience, which is passed down from generation to generation. A very unique kind of thing in the area because you really draw upon a community there, right? I mean, it's a specific community.
It is a specific community, and I have I always tell this story at conferences, and I don't mean it in a bad way, but to talk about how strong of a community, pretty much all of the tribal casinos that I've worked for have. At Paula, they at one time tried to do a campaign. Which was called How Not to Win at Paula Casino. And, you know, it kind of seems counterintuitive, but the whole point was to kind of show all the different amenities that the property had in a witty way. They brought in a character actor and they did all these great things that were actually at the time pretty, you know, cutting edge in terms of some of the interactive game works they had on the website and those kind of things involved with the character actor. And it just completely backfired on every level. So ownership, employees or team members, and guests. At every level, nobody liked it because they had a pride in the property and they felt that the character actor and the message was so not what they felt the property was, and they really felt that the property should have a much better reputation and perception about it. And so what ended up being something witty ended up, you know, kind of backfiring and being pulled, you know, very quickly after. But that just kind of shows that the whole community involved, not just the guests that come here, but the pride of the ownership and of the team members that work at your property, were all involved in that, and they all had a very strong, you know, strong reaction to it. So you have to remember that when you are at any property that you have all these different communities in which you have to interact with and get them kind of all in the same direction. And that is your guests, your team members, and of course your ownership.
Yeah. And that's, that's so important. So tell us a little bit in where, you know, there's been a lot of talk now about, you know, how the customer experience is even more important now. You see Vegas, 65, 35, 65 entertainment, 35 gambling. Is this a trend that's going to continue? And tell us a little bit about where you see where we're headed in the game.
I'm sorry, Tino. For some reason, I couldn't hear the first part of that sentence. Could you tell me that again?
Oh, sorry. No, I was just talking about how Vegas has you know, become like 70% experience and 30% gambling. And, you know, we're headed in this direction where people want to be entertained and maybe don't want to gamble as much now. And is this the way of the future? Where do you see we're going? Where is this headed? You know, where is this trend going?
But certainly, I don't think it's the way of the future. I think it's the way of the now. I think even when I started in the early 2000 in Las Vegas, you already saw that change where, major revenue was no longer coming from gaming. It was coming from all the other non-gaming elements. And so when you talked about experience or creating that experiential environment for your guests, I think that's entirely correct. And I think you're going to continue to see that. I think what we are in, and I always like to tell people this, is I'm in adult entertainment, right? And so we are looking for your entertainment dollar. In whatever facet that means for you. So if gaming is that outlet for you, great. You know, we have that product for you in a large variety and in huge non-smoking versus smoking environments here in Washington. But also, you know, food and beverage, entertainment, all the different things that you want to provide for guests, retail, all these elements and experiences are what people are craving for. They want to be able to remember. You know, they want memorable moments. Which is another kind of a catchphrase for anybody that's worked with me over the years. It's something that we strive to create. How do I create a memorable moment for all my guests? And I think you're just going to continue to see that. I don't think that whether it's 70% non-gaming versus 30% gaming is going to be as much of the issue as the focus on, you know, how do I garner that 100% of that entertainment dollar, or at least the most, you know, the largest piece of the pie that I can. And so the downside of that is now you're competing with regular entertainment throughout your individual communities, you know, and so, you know, people have to want to save and go to Vegas, or if you're in your regular community, a local environment, you know, you're going to compete with, you know, restaurants and movie theaters and, you know, shopping malls and those kind of things, because it's entertainment for those guests, and that's how they perceive their wallet. It's an entertainment wallet, total. And so how do I garner that? So you do that by creating and giving them the experiences they want. So I would agree that it's going to continue to grow that way. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mike, some of our listeners are probably people that are, you know, coming up through the business. Can you, what is a good way to start and get into the business? And, you know, what are the things that you need to learn on your way up? You know, what are some of the lessons that you've learned? And you know, how does someone get into it? How do you get into it?
I think it's a good question, and I, you know, every new hire orientation we go to, I give the same words of wisdom. I firmly believe in this. The best thing about this business is that it doesn't matter where you start. It doesn't, any job that you start in, it really doesn't matter. As long as you are present, you know, you're here for work, you work hard, and you're constantly learning, there's no job that you can't have. You really can learn and obtain any job in this business. And to point to that, it's one of those few businesses where you still have executives that are operating on a GM capacity or president level capacity that work their way up through the business. You know, they still have those start stories where I started as a doorman. I started as a security guard. I started as, you know, a receptionist. There's so many examples of that in our industry where it makes it phenomenal to me. And so it's one of the reasons why I love this business so much. And I myself have had a diversified career. I've gone from hotel ops and casino marketing and player development into IT of all places and other directions. And so I was able to try those different things and learn and grow in those levels as well. And I think for anybody coming in the business, you know, it's up to you. You have to make it happen. But opportunities there if you work hard, but you got to be patient. They're not just going to give it to you, and you got to demonstrate that you are understanding and that you are learning. And you know, frequently across my entire career, you know, I'll talk with my peer group or even above, and you talk about the team members that are coming up and saying, you know, who's got that potential? Who else can we give new opportunity to see how they do and how well they're doing? And you just continue to grow. You want to grow that bench strength. So you find that in the people that are there, that are working hard, and that are constantly learning.
Great, great advice. Okay, we're going to open it up to some questions. You've got a lot of people here.
I'm a little scared now. That'll be interesting.
The easy part's done, right? Hang on one sec.
Yeah.
Great, great advice. Hello, okay. Welcome to GP Radio. Do you have a question for Michael? Someone's got their internet on.
Someone's got the internet on mute.
Hello. Someone's got their internet on. someone's listening, but let's try the next one. Hello, this is GT Radio. Do you have a question for Michael?
Hey, Tino, this is Jonas. How you doing? Happy belated birthday.
Jonas, how are you?
Doing good. Doing good. Michael, how are you doing?
Jonas, how are you, buddy? I missed you yesterday.
Yeah, I apologize about that. I got stuck in a traffic jam in L.A., if you could imagine, on the way up.
Oh, yeah, I definitely remember those L.A. traffic jams, and I do not envy you at all.
No such
so
thing.
Tino, you live there all the time. I was going in for the flight. So here's my question for you, Mike. Because you've been doing this, you know, longer than a lot of guys I know, and when you started out going back to your Vegas days, how has the technology changed what you do on the marketing side?
Oh, you know, that's a great question, Jonas. Thank you. You know, for me, it's made it easier to make decisions, to be honest with you. If you talk about all the different points that we, accumulate data nowadays, you know, with players using their cards and now with kind of these Bluetooth beacons, and there's a lot of different ways in which we can kind of monitor, you know, traffic patterns throughout the casino floor, obviously in and out of the property, but you're really kind of seeing where people are spending their time at your property, and most, you know, loyalty cards now are tracking not just gaming activity, but, you know, many are now tracking non-gaming activity as well. And so being able to do that helps kind of customize that experience. You know, we talk about it being an experiential environment now and being able to best create that. You do that with the old hosting skills and trying to anticipate the needs and desires of your guests. And the data that we get now with all these new systems allows us to kind of predict that a little bit better and put the things in front of our guests that are they're hopefully going to resonate more with them. And so the best thing about all the new technology these days is that it just gives you a better way to insight to your guests and how you can kind of communicate to them. The challenge is a lot of times it's a set it and forget it approach, and I've seen this in multiple locations where, oh, I got the new system, let me put it in, we're going to set it up, we're good to go, and it starts. But they never go back and revisit the data, and they never go back and revisit who's responding to what and why and kind of do the constant tweaking that these systems really need you to do. You really need someone to monitor and maintain and develop all this data. Otherwise, it's, you know, data is only as good as the data is coming in. And so if the system is processing data that isn't being monitored and kind of maintained, you can quickly go off direction, and you may not be making that the same revenue as you thought, because you could be leaving a lot on the table out there. So for me, it's great to be able to customize and focus in on our guests and give them what they want and what they're really looking for. And the same token, we just got to make sure, you know, the caution, make sure you're monitoring it all the time.
And, you know, one other follow-up to that. Over the past 20 years or so, with the increased amount of technology, cards, computers, internet, Wi-Fi, all that kind of stuff, have you seen a dramatic increase in carded play over time?
You know what's funny? No. I mean, you know, you could almost there's almost like a standard percentage in I'll say per market. Some markets are a little different where the card in percentage has not, you know, really increased huge. But what has changed is the card activity percentage as it relates to overall activity at your property. So you could have a hotel, you could have your food and beverage outlets, you could have your entertainment experience, you know, all these other non-gaming environments where now you're able to utilize your card and track that activity back to the individual where, you know, you get just that much more engagement on those levels, like track play on non-gaming activity. And so that, I think, has certainly grown. But for the actual gaming component, you still have that segment of guests that just say, you know what, I don't want to use the card, or, you know, I think the card's going to, you know who I am, and you're going to change the machine, which we all know is not true, but I still think that way.
Okay. Well,
great,
right,
Jonas. Great question.
I appreciate the answer to the question, and I'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Jonas.
Thanks, buddy. All right, let's see what we got. Good questions. Let's see what we got here. Hello, this is GT Radio. You have a question for Mike? Hello, hello. GT Radio. Okay. Sometimes there's a time delay. Let's see who we got here.
No worries.
Hello, this is GT Radio. You have a question for Mike?
Yeah, Tino, Michael, how are you guys doing?
Good, how's it going?
Good. Who is this?
This is Venor Franca from Oklahoma. How are you doing, Michael?
What's going on, Venor? How you doing, buddy?
No, great job, guys. You guys, very nice to hear your story and hear a little bit of that background. You know, here in Oklahoma, Michael came over here to visit the Choctaw Nation, so it's nice, you know, to have that relationship and kind of understand, you know, where you guys have been and kind of how things are going. And Tina, you're doing a good job. You're going to, I guess, host Jamie Dillard from the Choctaw Nation. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're very excited about that one. Boy, that's going to be a great show.
I know.
I can't wait.
She's
a great
person.
Yeah. Did you have a question for Mike?
Yeah, so, Michael, so one of the things that I think you guys, like you said, ever since you've been, you got to Muckleshoot, you guys are changing things, you and Conrad, increasing the players into the casino. You know, you have tough competition there with Emerald Queen. So in your opinion, what are the key things that have helped you guys analyze those players and how you guys are making those changes there since you got there?
You know, we've been fortunate enough, I think, yeah, good question, by the way, Venor. We were fortunate enough to have Conrad as a GM, for one, and really allow us to kind of go out and find the tools that we need to really, first off, identify our business, and then, two, kind of maximize our opportunities. And so, you know, we've tested a lot of different programs out there, and so one of those being actually CCT, I think you might be familiar with it, Casino Cash Track, has done, again, a great opportunity for us for making the data that, you know, is so, you know, vast out there and simplifying it for us so that we can make quick decisions. And so, you know, I always look for programs that help take complex data and present it in a simple way. And when you can do that, the speed of decision, which oftentimes is the great limiter or the great difference between different properties, is how quickly they can respond based off of the information that they have to be, you know, that competitive edge. So it's certainly one of the things that I appreciate about the environment I'm in now, being able to bring in those tools so that we can really make those decisions as quickly as possible.
Great stuff.
Does that answer the question? I hope that answers the question.
No, you did, and great job, guys. Great interview, and look forward to seeing you guys at G2E.
Thanks.
Sounds good.
We'll
see you then.
Have a good night. Hang on one second. Let me see what we got here. Oh, I see an old friend here. Let's get him on. I think you know this guy. Hello, this is DT Radio. Did you have a question for Mike?
Hey, Mike. It's Golly. What's going on?
What's going on,
hey.
Golly? How you doing?
Good. Hey, I've probably known you longer than probably anybody else that I've known in gaming. And we've kind of shared, you know, similar tracks and similar, obviously, mentors and friends. Talk to us about what it was like back in the days, you know, let's say the Flamingo, you know, non-corporate entities, you know, tribal gaming really hadn't proliferated, but the, you know, kind of the atmosphere back then, you know, the relationships, you know, with, you know, mentors, with friends. How has that changed from, let's say, 20 years ago to 10 years ago to now? And you've had opportunity to be at different, you know, areas, different regions. You've worked at, you know, Las Vegas. You've worked at, you know, California. Now you've worked in, you know, Seattle. How have you seen, you know, kind of that environment change over the years, you know, from Flamingo, let's say, and then now to, you know, where you are today?
You know, I think I have to be a little bit PC on this one. So the best part about that is, you know, 20 years ago, it all came down to the same thing. You know, you were building those relationships with, you know, your mentorship, the people around you, and quickly, I think, your performance kind of spoke for you. That was your true resume out there back then. And you know, people only you know, worked with you if they could rely on you, and you could come through and do what you said you were going to do. And I think that mentality of that follow-through and getting the job done until it's done is something that, you know, you saw back then. And, you know, the relationships that you had there were frank. They were honest. Sometimes they were a little, you know, rough around the edges, but they were all for your benefit. And if you understood that, you really could take a lot with you. And you and I had the same group of friends. You know, we were all slightly competitive with one another in terms of, you know, how can I make one more dollar than this guy and strive to work hard to get that job to do it. And I'm still chasing, I think. But the you know, it was a personal drive that was there, and really the environment really nurtured people that had that drive to grow and to learn. And so as your you know, circle of friends grew and they grew in their careers, you were able to kind of have that open conversation back and forth and kind of glean what they were doing and kind of utilize it in your stuff. And that was the benefit of it, of having, you know, friends that understood where you came from and relationships that were there to help support you, to help you grow, and that sharing of knowledge. But it wasn't given freely. You worked hard for it. You know, fast forward 10 years, at that point I'm in California, and you know, we kind of jokingly have always talked about this difference between, you know, East Coast and West Coast mentalities. And, you know, East Coast is a very direct environment, you know, and West Coast, it's more of, you know, how are you saying things? What's the way in which we need to communicate to this particular segment of individuals so that they respond to it the best way? And I think there was a lot of time spent in communication styles that if you only adhered to one style, East Coast or West Coast, and Vegas was the great example of that, where they would bring in an East Coast executive or a West Coast, you know, executive, vice versa, and it would just fail. And so I think one of the things you learned in that process is that I do need to take that time. I do need to understand what are the different communication styles that are really going to resonate and work with the people that I have there. And at that time, when you got into tribal side of things, the relationships were slightly different because in different environments, the tribes were a little bit more competitive. And so, you know, that relationship, that open relationship that exists in Vegas between, you know, all the properties and all the people that are working at the properties doesn't really exist throughout all of tribal gaming. It works in some environments, but not all. And so you didn't have those resources, you know, hey, you know, how have you guys been, you know, handling, you know, things? And, you know, what have you done for this in the past? This is the new guy, you know, coming in. And, you know, those were kind of closed off. So you kind of had to, I wouldn't say reinvent the wheel, but you had to experiment in those environments as well if you couldn't get as much information as you needed to help me make that choice. So I think you saw that change a little bit. And I think now as we get current, you know, I think the buzzword now is millennials and you know, low-hanging fruit and all these different things that are out there. What really kind of resonates to me, at least relationship-wise, is that the drive for the up-and-comers isn't as prevalent as I've seen in the past. And so what I mean by that is there are a lot of talented individuals who are smart, who know their job, but aren't necessarily driven to go to the next level as opposed to waiting for the next level to arrive. And I think that is a challenge for, you know, a certain segment of our team members that you know, if they want to obtain that next level, they got to show that they have that drive to get to the next level and continue to grow. You know, and that takes constant learning. And I think that's the one difference you see. You know, I guess in that millennial group, I'll standardize. I can think of 1,000 examples where it's not true, but I also can think of many more where it is. And so, you know, again, my advice: work hard, stay driven, and always learn is what I constantly give to everybody. But that's where you see that change. So before, 20 years ago, open, you know, tight-knit group, sharing information. 10 years, changing your communication style, being a little bit more PC in your style, but still trying to get your point across. And then now, it's really about finding those individuals who are really driven to work to get to that level and nurturing them.
How do you see that changing, let's say, in 5 years? You think that will continue the way it currently is, or is there anything that we can do, to kind of change that atmosphere?
Well, I think as all business, businesses are always going to change as the environment grows and changes, and nothing's going to change the environment more as the people that are within it. So as each new batch of new team members come on board and come from an environment that they grew up in, they're all talking about their own shared experiences. Their shared experiences are different, and you've seen those generational differences, throughout history and throughout time. And so, I think the companies that are successful are the ones that can adapt and incorporate the strengths of each generation into their environment. Because there's no one right, one right way to do anything. It's, there's a thousand ways to approach any problem. And so, I think that's the learning lesson that people have now is, how do I do that cross-generational communication and get the most productivity out of each of those generations? Because now you have not only new young workers, you have many more that are older staying in their jobs longer than prior. So it's no longer retire after 20 years or 30 years. You have people working 40, 45 years, even longer in the business. And they all have great strengths. It's just about an effective manager being able to take those strengths and utilize them for the benefit of the property and the direction of the company.
Right. Yeah, great.
Thanks, Mike. I'll see you at GTE.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate
great question.
It.
Yeah, great questions. All right, we got time for one more. Let me see what we got here. Mike, great job. Hello, this is GTE Radio. You have a question for Michael. Hello?
Tino?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Fritz. How are you?
Good, good. How are you doing? Do you have a question for Mike?
Yeah. In the future, what do you think will be the marketing vehicle of choice? I know we hear a lot about mobile marketing now. Do you think maybe email will continue to be the go-to marketing vehicle, considering with all the data that we have now, and that all these casinos and corporations are building, is there one vehicle maybe that utilizes the data more effectively?
That's a good question, Rich. I think this one's going to really be dependent on the different markets, and I think Vegas, as an example, is going to be a lot different than the local properties, like Tribal Gaming or other locations that aren't a full destination. And the reason why I say that is because of the mix of the people that are going there. And so, the average consumer now is still, 55 plus female slot player, right? And so, for a lot of the local properties, and looking at that. You have to, one, understand them, that segment embracing technology is at, I think, a much higher level than most people understand or have thought of was going to be that way, because it coincides with the average user of Facebook or just off by about 10 years. And so, in terms of technology and their accepting of, any of these new forms, I think they're embracing it much quicker than we anticipated. And so I think smartphones and email are still going to be prevalent, but you still have a large segment of your database. I tell people, don't forget this, that still want paper in the hand. And so direct mail is going to be around for a lot longer than I think most people anticipate. But you've seen companies, Harris being one of them, where they've stopped with the mailers. It's all email. It's all digital. And it's been able to work for them. At a company of that size, I think when you're in a local market, you're going to go with, it's not going to be the cutting edge technology. It'll be, two generations back. And so email, I don't know much about text, but email right now is okay. But certainly, apps of some kind or mobile notification being an easy way for people to consume their data. And that's what we're all trying to do. Hey, let me get the offers in front of you the way you want it. And that's what we try to do, is trying to find out, how do you want to consume the information I got to give to you, or I want to give to you, and let them choose. Hey, I want it direct mail. I want it email. I want it mobile app. I want it whatever it's going to be. And there are, multiple ways to get that information. And I think what you're going to see is that more companies, instead of having these kind of widespread systematic approaches, are going to have these very customizable, because the technology is going to allow you to do this, very customizable campaigns that are all going to be multi-platform driven, right? And so they're going to come out with whatever the guest says they want, that's what they're going to go with.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much. That was a great answer. Yep.
Great stuff.
Hey, Rich, I really appreciate the question. Thanks, buddy.
Mike, that was a great interview. Really appreciate it. And we're gonna see you soon. I'm going to take another shot at this. Michael Kahanui. Is that right?
It's very close. You're so close, Tino, every time.
Give me one more shot. Say it.
Sorry, it's Kahanui.
Kahanui. Is that right?
There it is. That's the money word. You got it.
All right. That's the money. First time in 15 years, buddy. All right. Thanks for doing the show. And
hey, thank you,
we're going to see you soon at G2E.
Most definitely.
Take care, buddy.
Thank you so
I'll
much.
Talk to you
appreciate
soon.
It.
Okay,
have
bye-bye.
A good one.
Yeah, bye-bye. All right, that was great. Michael's been in the business a long time. Great guy. A lot of great stories, a lot of great insight. And that wraps up another episode of GT Radio Conversations with Tino. And remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just got to want to listen. We'll see you next time. Take care. Have a great day.